Praise be Jesus in the earth.
Now and forever.
Today we celebrate the memorial of Saint Charbel. He was rich soil, we could say, good rich soil that produced 100-fold. He was a Maronite. The Maronites are an Eastern Rite church in full communion with Rome, with the Pope. They are Syriac Christians who were cut off from contact with the rest of Christendom in 636 by a Muslim invasion. After that, they also began to speak Arabic in addition to Syriac, their liturgical language. In the 9th century, persecutions by the Caliph drove them into the Lebanon mountains. In the following century, they moved their spiritual center there from Antioch. They say they never broke with Rome, but for a long time they were not effectively under the jurisdiction of Rome. The Crusaders reestablished contact with them, and since 1182 they've been unquestionably in full communion with Rome. In 1828, Saint Charbel was born in the highest village in Lebanon, Beka Kafra. He was the last of five children born to Anthony and Bridget, and was baptized with the name Joseph. They were poor farmers, but very rich in faith and in devotion. An uncle on his father's side was a deacon in the parish church, and two uncles on his mother's side were hermits in the monastery of Saint Anthony. When he was three, his father died. His mother remarried 2 years later, but he was raised in the home of one of her brothers. He worked in the fields or took the cow or other animals to pasture. While he was watching the animals instead of playing with the other children, he preferred to pray in the shadow of a rock. In the evening, he prayed the rosary with his family. There was also time to learn to read and write. The parish priest taught classes under an oak in the town square. When he grew older, he joined the church choir and heard the chants of the liturgy. He also visited his uncles in the monastery and joined them in singing the office. At 14, he took to withdrawing to a grotto to pray. He wanted to become a monk, but his mother and his uncle resisted the idea. They said he was needed in the fields. In 1851, when he was 23, he went to the monastery of Maifuk to become a monk. In place of his baptismal name, Joseph, he took the religious name Charbel in honor of a second century martyr. This monastery was in the middle of a village. The monks worked in silence in the monastery's fields and together with lay farmers. To preserve recollection, Saint Charbel always looked down. He never would look up at anyone's face. A girl was apparently annoyed by this and threw a silkworm into his face. That night, St. Charbel thought about the incident. He would never find here the recollection he was seeking. So he left during the night, walking 4 hours to the monastery of St. Mara in Anaya, an isolated place in the mountains 4,000 feet above sea level. There, he asked to be admitted, and the general superior let him stay. When his relatives learned where he'd gone, they tried to convince him to come home, but he had to follow God's call. He told his weeping mother, "If it pleases God, we'll see each other again in heaven." After 2 years, he received the monastic habit and made his profession. There were about ten priests and 15 other monks in that monastery, but none could equal his virtue. He was chosen to become a priest and sent to study at the monastery of St. Cyprian. He spent 6 years there, learning from Father Nimodala Kasab al-Hardini, who was famed for his virtue and learning. He too is now a saint, canonized in 2004. Saint Nimodala died in December 1858, and the following July, Saint Charbel was ordained a priest. Because he loved solitude and silence and left no spiritual writings, much of his story, the story of his interior life, is known only to God. We know only what appeared externally. For the 16 years that he lived in the monastic community, he was the rule incarnate. When he died, the superior wrote in the obituary notice, "His obedience was not that of a man, but of an angel. It was so perfect that no one could figure out what he liked or didn't like. Whatever he was told to do, he did gladly." After the night office, he usually remained in church until morning, while the other monks returned to bed. He spent 3 hours a day on his own devotional practices of prayer. When it was time to work, he prayed the rosary as he walked out to the field or vineyard. Then he would pull back his hood and work hard in silence at whatever task obedience had set for him, even if it was beyond his strength. But he didn't consider the field work enough to tame his body. His mortification and self-denial were exemplary. He said, this body is like a donkey. If you feed it well, it becomes overbearing and incontinent. If you keep it hungry, it becomes docile. He never ate milk or fruit or drank wine or milk and didn't eat or drink anything outside of his two meals a day. His cell was a model of poverty and mortification. If he had any luxury, it was the few spiritual books he kept under his bed. The Life of St. Anthony, that is, St. Anthony of the Desert, the Confessions of St. Augustine, the Imitation of Christ, St. Alphonsus's Preparation for Death, and Alonso Rodriguez's Christian Perfection. He celebrated Mass with great devotion. Tears came to his eyes at the consecration, and he would take at least an hour to prepare for Mass and to make his thanksgiving afterwards. Later, when he became a hermit, he would celebrate Mass at 11 and spend the whole afternoon in thanksgiving. He never had any special position in the monastery, but he preferred to do humble tasks in place of his brethren, in whom he saw Christ. Although he did his best to remain hidden, word of his virtue got out and people came seeking advice or healing, help with their problems. His solitude was not what it used to be. A little higher on the mountains, there was a small hermitage dedicated to Saints Peter and Paul. In 1875, he moved there after a miracle. One day he'd been working in the fields until late, and so he came back to the monastery late at supper time. Then he asked the cellarer for some oil for his lamp, but the monk replied that it was too late and he wouldn't get any now. So Saint Charbel poured some water from a pitcher into his lamp and retired to his cell, where he prayed his office by lamplight for 2 hours. After the bell rang for lights out, his superior saw that the saint still had a light in his cell, so he went to demand the reason for the infraction. Saint Charbel knelt humbly, because he was being corrected, and explained that he had returned late from the fields and was carrying out his duty by saying his office. Then the superior demanded to know where he had gotten the oil, for he knew that the cellarer had refused to give it to him. In the end, the saint was forced to confess that he had put water in his lamp instead so that he could finish his office. The superior picked up the lamp, but it went out of his hand. When he poured out what was inside it, there was only water. The lamp had been making light with water for 2 hours. Astounded by the miracle, the superior said, "Pray for me." The next day, he wrote to the patriarch to ask for his authorization to send the holy monk to the hermitage to live in intimate communion with God. There he lived for 23 years, in silence, prayer, and work with his superior and a companion called Father Macarius. He now ate only once a day, used skin and bones, but his health didn't suffer. After Mass, he would remain kneeling in prayer before the altar until Father Macarius finally came and ordered him to leave. One day, a lightning bolt hit the hermitage. His companions rushed to the chapel, fearing they'd find him dead. But instead, he was so absorbed in prayer that he hadn't even noticed the lightning bolt, even though some of the objects on the altar were now burning. On December 16, 1898, he had a stroke during Mass. His companion, Father Macarius, helped him to his cell, where he suffered for 8 days before his death on Christmas Eve. His story might have ended with his death, but God wanted to draw attention to his saint. For 45 nights, a light was seen going up and down over the monastery of St. Mauro. A few months after his burial, his body was exhumed and found still intact. It was moved to a chapel. It emitted a reddish liquid, so much of it that the monks had to replace the clothing on the body twice a week. He was reburied in 1927 when the diocesan process of beatification began. In 1950, liquid coming from the tomb made the superior worry that that water had gotten into the tomb, so it was opened. The body was still intact and was the temperature of a living person. A reddish liquid, just like that seen in 1899, was again coming from the body. The tomb was opened again later that year to be examined by a commission appointed by the patriarch. On that occasion, there were many miracles reported, also by Orthodox and Muslims. The latter would say, "Father, bless me too. I believe in God, in Jesus, and in Charbel." Within the space of a month, 350 prodigious healings were reported. This attracted the attention also of Rome. And Pius XII had the Congregation for Rites examine his cause in 1954, and Paul VI beatified him in 1965 in the presence of the fathers at Vatican II, and canonized him in 1977. Praised be Jesus and Mary.
Amen.